as all river systems do, they're very dynamic and they change over time. Prior to the dam or any of the dams on the Colorado River, you would have seen very turbulent type flows and the river changing course over time within an envelope that that river would meander. And then times when it wasn't as turbulent and lower flow periods, it was more stable. So the general course of the river would be where it is today in general terms, but if the dams weren't there, they would certainly meander within envelope, especially when there were high flow periods. Downstream of the Grand Canyon, the areas are flatter, and it would have, during those periods of flooding, what you might call jump the banks, so to speak, and create floodplains downstream. But the Colorado River is a very, what I would call, controlled river between the dams. So again, we've got Hoover Dam that impounds Lake Mead. Downstream, we have Davis Dam that impounds Lake Mojave. Downstream of Lake Mojave is Parker Dam, and then that impounds Lake Havasu. And so those are reservoir systems, and between those reservoirs is the river, and it flows in a very controlled way between those rivers to create those lakes.
Today's segment is part of the series titled, Water is a Many Splendid Thing. Hello, I'm Steve Baker. This is Living Water. Near the border of Nevada and Arizona is a monolithic icon that controls the Colorado River and attracts a world audience each and every year. David Palumbo is the Deputy Regional Director of the Lower Colorado Region of the Bureau of Reclamation. He described to me the Colorado River back in the time before the Hoover Dam was built.
As all river systems do, they're very dynamic and they change over time. Prior to the dam or any of the dams on the Colorado River, you would have seen very turbulent type flows and the river changing course over time within an envelope that that river would meander. And then times when it wasn't as turbulent and lower flow periods, it was more stable. So the general course of the river would be where it is today in general terms, but if the dams weren't there, they would certainly meander within envelope, especially when there were high flow periods. Downstream of the Grand Canyon, the areas are flatter, and it would have, during those periods of flooding, what you might call jump the banks, so to speak, and create floodplains downstream.
The volume of rock that had to be removed and then the volume of concrete that was required to create the dam itself was an enormous task. The contract to build Hoover Dam got people excited because it meant jobs for so many looking for work.
People came from all over the country. There was such a demand for workers that the draw was significant of people coming in the hopes of finding a job and working on the dam. There's reinforcing steel in certain areas of the dam. There were iron workers, laborers. Significant work on the dam was tunneling and blasting. So there was what we call high scalers, those men that scaled down the canyon walls and blasted away parts of the rock so the concrete can be embedded. Those penstocks to deliver water either around the dam or through the dam, around the dam for that flood control reason and through the dam for the power production reason, were all done through tunnels. And those tunnels needed to be drilled and blasted and mucked out. And so that was a significant effort. Even before, again, the construction of the dam, those coffer dams and diverting the water around the dam site to dry it up, those tunnels were being blasted and created to create that diversion.
Engineers and workers were met with many opportunities of discovery through the process of building the dam. The enormous volume of concrete essential to grow the dam structure required special attention on how it would be applied.
The curing process of concrete is exothermic and it generates a lot of heat. All concrete cracks over time, so the massiveness of the dam prevents significant cracks from occurring. We monitor through a series of measurement devices within the dam any type of seepage, if you will. There was a series of cooling pipes. Actually, when the dam was constructed, a lot of, if you look at historical photos, the cooling water system ran down the middle of the dam and then out distributed through either side of the dam. The middle part of the dam was the last part of concrete to be placed, so the dam essentially rose in two pieces. The right side and the left side and the middle part was filled in later after the left and right abutments were created. So it's very interesting. A lot of people don't notice that. And if you look at the dam, especially from the downstream side, you can see the strip down the middle that was placed last that allowed that cooling water system to function until it was filled in. The placement of the concrete was what we would call made in lifts, and those lifts would be strategically placed again so that initial, that rapid, that high exothermic action didn't impact the adjacent placement. So it was very strategic in how those lifts were sequenced.
Really, understanding how much concrete was needed to hold back all that water in Lake Mead is hard to comprehend. The analogy that works best for me is this. Imagine building a sidewalk, not just any sidewalk, but a 4-foot-wide sidewalk that stretches across the entire world at the equator. That is how much concrete was needed to hold the mighty waters of the Colorado River in Lake Mead and make possible living as we know it today in the arid southwestern United States. Fundamental to our lives and environment, I'm Steve Baker. This is Living Water.